Hi, everybody. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. Now, before I start do anything tonight, I just want to recap last week. A couple of things that I remembered later about writing down everything on paper that in the fourth step. These were two things that were said to me through the years that helped me to. Because, you know, the fourth step isn't done once. It's not done just once. It's part of our living, you know, part of our life. I always say we live the steps. And so there are times that there are things that are inside of us that we don't remember truly. We remember the worst stuff in the beginning. But once, you know, once we get settled in and we start living the program, things... You hear people lead, and they'll say something, and you'll say, "Oh my God, that happened to me," and then you have to write it all down, and you have to talk to somebody about it. So, this is the first thing: if your mother were sitting in front of the television watching your life, everything in your life, you know, from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to bed at night, school, you know, everything in your life. If there was one thing, anything that she saw that you would be embarrassed about or feel terrible about, that's the stuff you write down. And then another thing is if you're walking down the street and somebody's coming toward you in a different direction and you know that person and have something against that person, you'd rather cross the street than talk to that person, that you got to write that name down too. Because whether that person did something to you or you did something to them, that goes on the amends list. Because when we clean up the wreckage of our past, it doesn't matter if we did it or they did it, we got to get free from it. So, in the fifth step, of course, I have a couple things I want to read because, you know, to get me into what we're going to talk about. The first step is, or the first thing I read is from the fifth step here. But of all the things which really bother and burn us, we say nothing. Certain distressing or humiliating memories we tell ourselves ought not to be shared with anyone. These will remain our secret. Not a soul must ever know. We hope they'll go to the grave with us. What are we likely to receive from step five? For one thing, we shall get rid of the terrible sense of isolation we've always had. Almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. Even before our drinking got bad and people began to cut us off, nearly all of us suffered the feeling that we didn't quite belong. Either we were shy and dared not draw near others, or we were apt to be noisy good fellows craving attention and companionship, but never getting it, at least to our way of thinking. And then down here, until we talked with candor, complete candor about our conflicts, and had listened to someone else do the same thing, we still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship with man and God. And I think that's the only thing I found here. This feeling of being at one with God and man, this emerging from isolation through the open and honest sharing of our terrible burden of guilt, brings us to a resting place where we may prepare ourselves for the following steps toward a full and meaningful sobriety. Now, into action, it says, if we skip this vital step, which is step five, we may not overcome drinking. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, people turned to easier methods. Alcoholics turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder many in the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. When I took my fifth step, it made it easier for me. I told you last week how I did it. I wrote it all down in an address book. And then I went to my sponsor with his address book and I started talking. You know, I was looking at what I'd written down, and I just started telling her the things in my life from the time I was, I think I told you last week, from the time I was 10 years old is when the first time I ever had a bad feeling. And I moved forward with that. With teachers, you do that with teachers, anyone in your life that you have a bad feeling about, whether you did it to them or they did it to you, it doesn't matter. And then, of course, in the fourth step, in the big book, it shows you how to do that. But what helped me so much while I was doing my fifth step was that my sponsor was also sharing herself with me. And there were things that I did that she did. And so she would talk about those to me. And in doing that, made me feel better about myself because I was so ashamed of who I was and how I was. And I had all this anger inside of me. I couldn't tell her everything, though. I mean, it takes, when you first do it, when I first did it, I did feel better about myself. And then I didn't read the part in there where it says, after a while, those feelings start coming back because you haven't dug deep enough. And so you got to get back to work and you got to get rid of all this stuff no matter what. So what I did was I wanted to get an annulment from my husband so he could be married in the Catholic Church. And so I started that process. And in doing that, I had to go and talk to a priest. Now by this time, I got mostly everything out. But there were some things inside of me that I, like the big book says, was never, ever, ever going to tell another human being. And I was afraid not to, but I was afraid too. But I got in to see this priest and I explained to him who I am and I'm an alcoholic and that I take full responsibility for what happened in the marriage. And he was a wonderful priest, and he'd done fifth steps before, so he knew the agony. And so I told him everything that I knew at that point in time. I told him everything, and he didn't even blink an eye. And I felt, that's when I felt the true relief of what the fifth step is all about, that I felt free. Now, I didn't walk out of there with a great spiritual experience. For me, it was a very slow process. Sometimes others get the spiritual experience early on, or it could be very dramatic, but mine wasn't. Mine was just a very slow process of understanding God and starting to feel like he was with me. So after I did that, then, of course, from that, next week we'll talk about 6 and 7 together, because they are together. They mean almost the same thing, and so we can put the two of them together. The differences is what we'll talk about. So after my fifth step, I felt so much better. And then, of course, you have to go on reading. You can't stop what you're doing. And in this fifth step, I started to see who I was, what kind of a person I was, and what kind of a mother I was. And I knew that my marriage went because of my drinking. And I wanted to be free. You know, I told you I was a housewife turned swinger. I wanted to be a swinger. If I would have been a monkey, I would have been swinging from the trees. I remembered, I'll tell you a couple funny things, you know. I certainly won't stand from the podium and give you my fifth step. I don't have to do that. You know that. Probably most of you in this room have done your fifth step. And And that's good, but you never stop looking at things, you know. I was sober 10 years when I made my last amend, because, you know, they say you got to get it over with as fast as possible. Well, that's not quite true in my case, I don't, at least I say, because, you know, it just never happened. It was just never able. I was just never able to see this person for it to happen. But it did after I was sober 10 years. And I'll tell you about that next week. So after I took my, went to the priest and talked to him and learned who I am, saw everything about me, about especially the mother part. I was a terrible mother during those years. My daughters were very young when I started drinking, and they suffered more than anyone because of the effects of my drinking. As the years went by, I drank more, and it took more to get me to where I wanted to be. I couldn't leave the house without drinking because I didn't have the courage to go out without a drink in me. So I get half sloshed and then go out, and you know, I love to dance, and so I danced all night. And as the years went by, I did a few more things all night besides dancing. But one night I was in a bar, and I was going to, because I love to dance, and I don't know, somebody bet me something, I guess. And I stood up on the bar and did a little dance, and my head ripped right through the ceiling of the bar. That was not classy, you know. Not classy. You know, I just, at work, I'd go to work in the morning, and at lunchtime we'd go to the bar to have a sandwich. And of course, at the end of my drinking, probably the last 7 or 8 months, it was after I made the Curcio that I really, really, really got into the drinking, because I knew what a terrible person I was. And I also found out through this Curcio movement that God was not a punishing God. But I could not imagine how he could ever forgive me for all the things that I had done. So with my children, I right away, my sponsor told me, you go home and be the kind of mother that your daughters deserve to have. And that's what I did. I started all over again in my life. It was like a newborn person that I, you know, I got up in the morning and asked for help and went to work and did what I was supposed to do and came home at night and I just did what mothers do. And I, you know, I didn't really know what mothers did for all those years, and especially living by myself, because when Bob and I divorced, I was a full-blown alcoholic at that point. So my daughters living with me was nothing. Even today, I am so grateful. I am so grateful. But getting back to the story at work, I'd come home, I'd go to lunch and drink, and then I'd come back to work in the afternoon, and I'd be belligerent. And the women that worked in the office near me said they hated to even talk to me in the afternoon because I was not very nice, until I started coming down off the booze about 3 or 3:30, and then I would quiet down, looking forward to getting home and drinking again. So, and I was very fortunate that I didn't lose my job at that time, because I had a brand new boss, and he was so busy learning the business that by the time he got around to me, I was sober. So, you know, God was working in my life even when I never realized he was. And with every one of you in this room, when you think about the things that happened to you out there, something higher than yourself was watching over you. Every one of us in this room probably need to be dead. We probably should be dead for the way we lived our lives. And something higher than us was watching watching over us to make sure that some of the things that happened to us, that we were protected. And I truly believe that today, that I could never, if there hadn't been power greater than me watching over me, I would not be standing here tonight. So I know this is really going to be long tonight, but maybe some questions from you will help me to, to continue on talking. I think being in the fifth step, it's like you, I'm not going to stand up here and share my fifth step with you. It's more like how I did it and what happened afterwards, because I, as I said, I had a sense of freedom that all this stuff was out of me, and I could now be, start all over again in my life. So give me some questions, please. Please give me some questions.
Thanks, Beverly. So now we'll open this up for some questions, comments in the form of questions. What? Oh, your question.
Oh, he has a question. No, I didn't know you in the bars.
Hello, I'm still an alcoholic. My name is Bruce. Thank you, Beverly. I have a question. You spoke about you had one that you took care of almost 10 years sober. Are you able to elaborate on that? How that happened?
I can
happened?
Do that tonight.
I'm just kind of curious because
yes.
Things pop in my head. And,
yes. Okay, well, what happened was I started running around with this guy, and his relative worked with my mother. And so this woman went to my mother and told her about I was running around with this guy. This is when I was drinking. This was after Bob and I were divorced. And my mother came to me and confronted me about it, and I got furious, absolutely furious. So my mother, I lied. I told her that was not true. He was just my friend, and we went there to play cards one night. And how dare her even say anything? It's none of her business the way I live my life. And so my poor mother, she didn't talk to this woman again. They no longer were friends. And so she worked at the GE as I did, and she was getting off the elevator. I was sober 10 years, and she was getting off the elevator one day, and I said, "Can I talk to you?" And she said, "I don't want anything to do with you. Just leave me alone." And she started to walk away, and I said, "Please, please. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic, and what I did to you was so wrong, and I am so sorry." And I started to cry. And so she accepted my apology, and when she retired from GE, I was at her retirement party. So, see, that's why I say you don't always have to run and look for people. You get set up. You know, God sets you up so that at the right time in the right place, you are going to make those amends. Now, when I was sober 3 months, I went to this, I think I told you, maybe I didn't, about the night that I was at this party when somebody gave me my first glass of wine. And by the time the evening was over, after a second glass, I told everybody in the room off, because they were people that we ran with for 10 years. I was the world's greatest people pleaser, so I did everything they wanted me to do. But when I started drinking, I decided they're going to hear from me about how I really think about them and how they were. So I was in this whole group. We split. We didn't see each other anymore. At least Bob and I didn't see them anyway. So when I was sober 3 months, this couple lived near my sister, and I was going up to my sister's house, and I remembered where they lived. And so I stopped in. They let me come in the house, and I sat down, and I apologized to them and told them how very sorry I was for the way I had acted. And again, they forgave me. And I didn't... I just felt so good being able to start doing those kinds of things. But until we do our fifth step and get everything written out, we don't even realize who we hurt or who we didn't hurt, because you don't even know the words to describe how you felt and why you did these things, because it's the alcoholism, it's the character defects in us that make us the way we are. That help? Did that help? Okay. Nobody has any questions. This is going to be over very early tonight.
Thank you, Bev, for sharing. On this step five, I had a difficult time with that trust issue of sharing my inventory with my sponsor. How did you get past that trust yourself, and how do you work with your girls now on letting them know that the trust is there?
I didn't trust my sponsor in the beginning. That's why I didn't share everything with her. My circumstance was that I had a sponsor, and I love her dearly. I loved her, you know, and I love her today. But one of the things that I learned while she was working with me when I was very young in the program, is that she was dating a guy, and he knew everything that I was telling her, because he would then talk to me about it, and I didn't like that. I did not trust that I was going to be able to tell her everything without. But see, back then, I didn't really know I didn't trust her. You see, I didn't like that she told him what was going on with me, because I don't know, I just didn't like it. Because I wasn't able to forgive myself yet, or let go of the stuff that I talked to her, you know, in the beginning, not in the fifth step necessarily, but, you know, things that I was talking about in the first few months of my sobriety. And the guilt, you know, the guilt and the shame, and I didn't have to say what it was. It's just that I had this terrible feeling inside of me, and I didn't know how I was going to get rid of it. So that taught me something very, very, very early on, that I never, ever have shared anything with any woman that I do a fifth step with. Never. In fact, what I learned how to do was, once we're done, and I think I can attest to you, because we've shared things through the years, that I never, it's gone. I just ask God, take it away, and you go home, and I can't remember a thing you said to me, because it's not important. It's not important. It was important for you to share about it. It was important for me to share things about me to you, but it wasn't important for me to hold on what you said. So I've never, ever had a problem. But I do know, and I think I told you guys a few weeks ago, that there was a girl that came to the program, and somebody sponsored her and did her fifth step with her, and then went around and told other women about what she said. And she left AA and never came back. Never came back. And so, and how I know about that is because my family doctor is her husband. And he's very active in Al-Anon. So that's how I learned about it. Okay. Does that help you? You just zip your mouth after you're done and walk. And when the girl is finished, you give her a hug. And call her in the next day or two, make sure everything's okay. That's another thing that you can do, too. And then it's gone. It's just gone. Any other questions?
Beverly, Diane Wash here. You said that you shared some things with your family priest. Do you recommend that, you know, it's okay to share it with someone, not your sponsor, but to share it with someone who's familiar with the recovery program, that can really understand what we're attempting to do? 'Cause early on I tried to do it with my parish priest, and he was totally clueless.
Yeah.
And I got really discouraged.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up, my very first one I did with my psychologist.
Yeah.
But she was very familiar. She gave me my first big book, as a matter of fact, so she was very familiar about recovery and what I was attempting to do. But do you recommend that if you don't do it with your sponsor, you do it with someone who really knows what you're trying to accomplish?
I'm thinking here. Actually, the reason I did that was because I didn't trust. And I know that a priest is not allowed to tell another human being, you know, what goes on with confessions. But I think I've read this through the years, that the trust is deeper when you're sharing it with somebody that you're hoping will never tell another human being. And I think when you're working with a new person, if they can trust you right from the very beginning, I don't think there's the problem, especially when they're sharing with you what they did, which is what you did. You know, then it doesn't make it, so bad. But I know there are, you know, when you have a lack of trust, yes, it is a good thing, because you know it's never going to go anywhere. But what does it take then for you to gain trust in somebody else? You know, we got to learn to live with other people. We got to learn to live with the outside world. We got to learn to share the things inside of us that kept us, you know, from being normal, healthy human beings. And so in my life, I've shared things with people that I don't sponsor. You know, I've shared with people, when I worked at the credit union, I had so many opportunities to share Alcoholics Anonymous, because people would come in and they'd talk about an alcohol problem, or there would be, you know, I had a daily reflections on my desk, and everybody knew it, so if they were having a bad day, they'd come in and read the book. And one woman that I shared everything with, her husband ended up coming in AA, and she knew what to do when he got in trouble. She knew what to do. So I think it's really an individual thing. In my case, it was an individual thing. In your case, it was your psychologist, because you trusted her. You know, and I think everybody's different, so it just depends. You just have to, I mean, I'm serious. You have to be very, very careful about who you're sharing your life with, especially things that you could get in trouble with. You know, because they talk in the big book, you know, you owe people money, or you owe a lot of people money, you might have hurt somebody, you might have killed somebody. You know, it takes a lot of thinking in order to get through it, because when the person that you're sharing the fifth step with has there is no reason for them to go beyond what you've told them. They should never go out and tell another human being. They should never go out and go to the law and tell them what you did. It's gone when you're done. I hope I'm sounding okay.
Hi, Beverly, it's Jeannie, alcoholic. What if you come across like a sponsee that has done something pretty horrible, and you have to report them? Maybe it's like an abuse situation.
No.
You don't do it?
No.
Okay, I just wondered.
You encourage them to do it.
To do it?
Okay. Yes. Okay. You encourage them to do it. If they're running from the law, they need to go to the law and turn themselves in. And what they're going to see as time goes by, it's going to be a beautiful thing, because that's the way God wanted to lead them, to get them to make things right. And the same with owing money. You know, they tell you, but you can't tell them, or you go out and pay it. You can't tell anybody what to do about what they've done in their fifth step. You're the ears, and sharing yourself. You just encourage them, Jean, the sooner they do that, the better off they are. Because that's going to hang over their head no matter what.
Hi, Beverly. Laura, alcoholic. That was kind of my question, too. What do you do when, you know, there's someone that needs to, you know, make some sort of other amends or turn themselves in or whatever? And I guess it comes down to, you know,
encourage them to do it,
but say, I can't do that for you.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. That's right.
So mine is kind
they
of
have
an
a saying,
question.
And Wendy knows this saying now: let go and let God.
Yeah. Okay.
I gotta learn it.
Yes, really. You know, we're not police officers. We're not, you know, we encourage them and let them know that they need to take care of whatever it is. And they'll find that, you know, when you've been around a while and you understand how God works in our lives, you just know that when they take care of whatever the problem is, that it's all going to turn out for the good.
And I suppose that you have to be careful not to hold their hand while they do whatever they need to do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely, okay. You can.
Maybe give them advice on how to...
No, if they're going to go to the law, you can go with them. Mm-hmm. If they've made a decision that they're going to go, you can go with them to support them. I mean, I've gone to court hearings for women. You support them in whatever mm-hmm. their decisions are, but it's their decisions.
Or, yeah, but I mean, maybe you could give them the name of a lawyer.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Any way you can help them once they make the decision.
Change the subject, but still step five.
Yes, dear.
Is I've noticed when I do a five with the girls I've done it with, it seems like I always take whatever they did and then draw their focus to the reason why they did it, under the column where they're selfish
yeah.
or afraid, or I focus a whole lot on that. Like, it's almost like, now do you understand why you did that?
Yep.
I
absolutely.
Mean, of course you would do that, because here's what's going on
yeah.
inside of you. And
absolutely.
It almost like takes, it helps them even feel better about what they did, because now they're understanding what was really going on inside of them, the root cause of their behavior and their action.
Yes.
So I was wondering.
That's very good. That's part of it. That's all part of it. You know, that's why I think the questions are so great, because I can't think of all that. You know, but that's true. You know, that's what you're showing them through their inventory. What, you know, what caused them to be the way they are? What defect of character is it? You know, jealousy or fear or anger or whatever. You know, it just yeah. So that's good, Wendy.
Thanks, Bev. Once again, you're terrific. My question is regarding, do you have a timetable for people when they start their four step and when they have to do their fifth step? I mean,
no, I don't have a timetable, but I encourage them to do it as quickly as they can, because you know, that's where all the freedom comes in. That's when we start, you know, living, when we get rid of all that garbage. And some people, it takes longer than others. I there's no timetable. I've heard of people they've been on step three for a year. Well, I don't quite understand that, but I guess I don't have to. You know, everybody's different. But in my opinion, the sooner you get through those steps, the sooner you're going to start being able to live a great life, you know.
So is that how you encourage them to speed it up?
Yes. Well, I don't encourage them to speed it up. I just let them know in the beginning what they're expected to do in order to start feeling better about themselves. Is before they can do the fourth, they have to have become willing. See, that's the key. In order to do a good fourth step, you have to have done the third and become willing to do whatever it takes. You know, it's just the willingness, and then God leads you into doing the fourth and the fifth step.
Do you find that the people who drag their feet for, say, year-ish, suffer more or less, or?
Oh no, I don't think they're going to suffer any more. They're not going to suffer any less. They're going to be stagnant. They're going to be where they were before they quit drinking. So it's, you know, it just depends on the sponsorship, really. How far along, how you can encourage a person to, you know, get into their steps. And so There is no time period. That's it?
Jim Alcoholic.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm sponsoring a guy who's Catholic. I know he's Catholic. I know he goes to church. No God. Problems there. We're doing a fifth step. He and I do a fifth step. He does his fifth step with me. Is God just part of that, or do you suggest that he also do that with a priest?
In my opinion,
yeah.
It's God's a part of that. But if he's Catholic, and if he is a firm believer in confession, then I don't know what to tell you. I really wouldn't. I've never come into that before. You know, because you're right. It's between you and that person and God. He's the center of all of it, you know. So I guess what you would, if he were to ask you that question, you'd have to say you'd leave it up to him. But, you know, the forgiveness is in the sharing. You know why? I just commented about that this morning. And nothing against the Catholic religion, believe me. I was born and raised Catholic, and I don't have anything about religion. But I'll tell you one thing. I never, ever, ever made a good confession to a priest. Never. From the time I was 8 years old to the time that I went to that priest for the annulment, I never said any more than I hollered at my kids or hollered at my mother or hollered at my husband or never, ever, because it wasn't in me to do that. And I was reading in the newspaper this morning, because it's very, very open now, about the sexual abuse among the priests. And I said, you know, when I was a child, priests were God. They were your channel to God through the priest. And look at it today. They're not, you know, they're human beings just like we are. So you probably would just have to encourage him to do whatever his faith tells him to do. But I think it's between you and that person and God. That's a good question, really.
Hi, Carrie Alcoholic. After you do a fourth, you do a fifth, right? But and you said last week that you do a couple of fourths a year. So do you go do your fifth now to your sponsor?
I share myself with, if I'm sponsoring, the women that I sponsor, I have several women that I sponsor, and they've been around a long time, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if one went through what I'm going through, I call that person.
Oh, okay.
And tell that person what was going on inside of me. So
okay. It's
I have no fear anymore of sharing anything that's inside of me. I have no fear.
Okay.
And so that's what you do. You just, you know, somebody that you're working with, that maybe you've somebody that's had the experience that you had. My sponsor now, I see her every Wednesday night. We had a healing because there was a time when there was a rift between us. But she's more my friend than my sponsor. You know, because I share myself with whoever I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
And the other stuff that I let go when I was, you know, sober 4 or 5 months, the only time that would ever come up is if it was her that went through what I, or is going through what I went through. And then I would share that on myself. So, and I have another quick thing too while I'm thinking of it. I did sponsor a woman one time, and I did share some things with her. And she called me a drunk one night and threatened to tell my daughters. And and how all that ended up was that I had her put into rehab. I mean, the police came. The bar called the police because she called me 27 times. She got $3 worth of dimes. It was a dime at that point to call somebody. 27 times that night, there were 3 dimes left, and they called the police on her, and then the police called me and asked me what I wanted to do, and I told them to put her in a rehab, and that's what they did. And so she never, we never had a problem again. But I'm saying that could happen too. You know, those kinds of things can happen. So, but again, you can't live in fear worrying about it. You know, if she would have told my daughters, what I ended up doing was telling one of my daughters. And then that way, if she would have done it, then I would have been covered. And as it turned out, it was a good thing to do. It was a good thing for me to do, to share with my daughters. So, can we be done? It's warm in here.
Yeah.